Joining me in studio now for a closer look at the equity space is Nessie Chetty from Momentum Asset Management. Nessie, thanks so much for joining us today. So, erratic markets taking the JSE into correction territory. I mean, this volatility has been the name of the game for this week, very much so. So what are you making of the activity we saw today?
Certainly, Alicia. I mean, we saw, most sectors in the red today. Over the last 2 days, we saw that massive sell-off across technology shares in the U.S. So Amazon, Apple, Nvidia, and Facebook all down on sort of bad news are coming out of there. And especially in the US, equity market valuation still exceptionally high and tighter liquidity. I still think there's some concern in the US regarding protectionist measures coming through from Donald Trump, especially looking at, Chinese investment in those sort of technology companies where things tend to be very sensitive. So that hasn't settled as yet. Certainly, if you look at from a commodity perspective, we did see some softness in crude oil prices. That American API Institute did come out with a surprise note showing that crude oil inventories had increased by another 5 million barrels to about 430 million barrels in total. Crude oil did come off a little bit. Our market still, dominated by interest rate news. So we did have a 25 basis point cut in interest rates. And quite a few companies from gaming companies down to healthcare reporting results.
Absolutely. Let's take a look at a couple of those because Netcare has announced that it's going to be exiting the UK. What have you made of that move? It's rental escalations over on that end that seems to have pushed it over the edge.
Yeah, so you must remember, the Netcare business in the UK, they bought that through GHC back in 2006. And at that stage, the UK environment, operating environment was still fairly strong. They bought that business as part of a consortium. When they did buy, they split it up into an operating company, which is BMI Healthcare, and a property company. The one thing they did do at that stage was fix the rental escalation. So rentals were fixed at 2.5% in pounds in the UK. Subsequently, we had the financial crisis, inflation remained low for a long period of time. And it got to a stage where the rentals were escalating at a much higher level than what the real economy was growing by. Yeah. So to the point where if you take the rentals, just the cost of that relative to where revenue it's almost as much as 20% off that base. So it is a high number. And given that they do need to make an investment in that business, to make an investment in those assets and still get an acceptable return, I think is not possible anymore. And given that they've done probably close to 4 or 5 years of renegotiations with the largest landlord there, that just hasn't happened. South African business in Netcare is still very, very good. If you look at patient days, it's up about 3%. Revenue per patient day is up around about 5%, with still very good occupancy levels at around 64. They haven't added any new beds over the period, so that is a like-for-like comparison.
So this move then enhances Netcare's investment case in your books?
Yeah, so certainly I think from a longer-term outlook, given that the South African business is doing quite well and there's a refocus in there, what they did initially was, when they set up that UK business, all the assets were ring-fenced. There's no recourse to the SA balance sheet. And I think over time, given that the refocus will be SA, you'll have a much cleaner structure to be able to analyze the results and cash flows.
Okay, so that's some of the repositioning that's happening there. In the meantime, we've had Pumalela repositioning itself over the past year, 6 months or so, and that's starting to pay off. Certainly, if you're looking at things on a normalized headline earnings basis, we've seen an increase of 52% come through in those earnings. Hard to fault these numbers at this stage.
Yeah, so a very good result. I think in the headline earnings per share level up some 12%. One must remember that these type of operators, the focus has become across multi-channels as well. So multi-betting operations, if you look at it historically, the tote was effectively the only outlet where you could go and actually take a bet. With the advent of smartphone technologies, online betting has become quite popular, and also telephonic betting as well. So this is an area where Pumalela is capitalizing on. It's a market share. I think they look to capture a lot more going down the line, and especially a bigger share of customers' wallet. Mm-hmm. So, it's a 1.6 billion asset base. It does give them a bit of a diversified revenue stream. These companies tend to be cyclical, very geared by discretionary spend in the economy. One must also remember, I mean, they've also got a media rights business where effectively we broadcast horse racing all over the world, and we earn a fee with that, and there's a commingled pool. So that area of the business also is growing quite well. But I mean, I was quite impressed. I mean, it is a solid result in an environment where discretionary spending is actually slowing down.
Absolutely. Well, we've got the company CEO joining us in studio a short while from now to take a closer look at the sustainability of numbers like that. Let's put EOH under the spotlight. Are you convinced that this is a company that's turned the corner and the worst is really behind them?
Yeah, look, I mean, if you look at the revenue line, I mean, revenue was up across most of their segments. I mean, they did have that fall in earnings. The business will be restructured going forward, and you'll have two distinct businesses, an ICT business, and also a distinct specialized business. ICT in this set of results has actually done okay. The public sector spend has actually declined over the period. So that's a bit of a worry then, that those large contracts are not being awarded out. So it will impact revenue going down the line. But I think, I mean, one needs to wait for this restructure to take place and see how that potentially plays out. Remember, a lot of the share price decline has been due to a derating, media influence, and also that negative result from profits coming down.
Yeah. So amidst it all, what's your stock pick at the moment, Hesi?
So, I mean, given that interest rates, I mean, have been cut, and we're looking for an environment where, I mean, potentially bond yields will probably look to come down slightly lower. I mean, we're going with a company called Hyprop. It owns some of the best shopping centers in South Africa. It's on a forward yield of about 7.6%, and also growing their distribution about 8%. We think the asset values on those properties are quite attractive for where the yield is. To speak to the underlying fundamentals of the asset, I mean, vacancy is exceptionally low. In a quality portfolio like this, I mean, vacancies are about 0.9%. And they're also getting decent escalation growth on their larger centers. So it's one at these yield levels we find quite attractive.
Well, let's leave it there, Nessie. Always a pleasure. Thanks so much for having joined us in studio this evening. Of course, Nessie Chetty is with Momentum Asset Management. Marian Roberts is back in the green after its share price extended some losses today due to its independent board rejecting Aton's $400 million takeover bid, along with Old Mutual, which holds a 5% stake in Marian Roberts. But with Aton already owning a third of the company, as well as having backing from Allan Gray, which holds an 11% stake in Marian Roberts, could the company be preparing itself for a hostile takeover bid? Henry Lars, who's CEO of Marian Roberts, joins us in studio now with more insight behind the decision to reject the offer and where this leaves the company at this stage. Henry, thanks so much for joining us today. Yeah. So, as I say, we've had Marian Roberts advise shareholders to reject the takeover offer, where Aton's approach to the board was mere courtesy, though. Do things now turn hostile?
Well, what the board can do, the board can only recommend to shareholders. And the 15 Rand, we don't believe, represents fair value. And for that reason, the independent board did come out strongly yesterday rejecting the offer. Mm-hmm. It is up to Aton how they would manage this going forward, but the fact that they have gone directly to shareholders without getting the board on their side, I would say is very aggressive. I'm not sure whether you can use the word hostile yet.
Yet, being the imperative word.
It certainly is aggressive, yes.
So what does this mean for the business? Because there are dangers inherent with things getting a little bit more aggressive, if we use that word, or even with Aton having amassed such a big stake in the business, but thinking very differently about the route the business should be taking.
Yeah, there's only one area of overlap between Aton and the Marian Roberts Group. Aton, as you know, is an investment holding company. They've got various assets that they're invested in, and they own a company called Redpath, which is an underground mining contractor, very similar to our underground mining platform. Mm-hmm. So that's the only area of synergy or overlap between Aton and Marian Roberts. So should they proceed with the offer, what the eventual outcome of that would be, I think, is anybody's guess at this stage. Mm-hmm. Should they accumulate shares up to 50% or don't get beyond 50%, it would be a different outcome compared to when they get a shareholding above 50%, because with above 50%, you're in a much stronger position to decide on the composition of the board. But I think from a strategic point of view, I cannot imagine that a company would make an investment of $400 million plus and then completely change its course. I think the company has gone through a major transformation over the past couple of years. It is at a point which I think it is attractive to Aton, so Aton sees value in the company. The only point we have as a board is that we don't agree with the 15 rand which has been put forward.
Which begs the question then is, looking at that offer that has been rejected, is it simply about the money? Would a more compelling offer potentially change your mind?
No, but what we have to do is we can't decide on behalf of shareholders. We're there to give guidance to shareholders as a board. And we have now appointed, through the independent board, we've appointed an independent expert. And the independent expert will also advise the board very, very soon on its view of fair value. And after the independent board will give guidance again to shareholders.
Yeah, what the independent board has highlighted, of course, as you've reiterated, is the fact that it undervalues the business. So where you were sitting at about, 9 rand a share before this announcement, why were the prospects, these improved prospects down the line, not being reflected in the share price?
Yeah, I think the share price is trading at a low. And you will remember that in November last year, we were trading at 17 rands a share. So we are currently at a very low point. And when Aton acquired its 30% stake in the group, that was at a price of about 15 rands a share. Now they want to take control of the group at 15 rands a share, which appears to be a very healthy premium to where we traded just before they made the approach. But in November last year, we were trading at 17 rands a share. From the time that the share buyback was voted down by Aton at the AGM last year, the construction stocks traded downwards very, very strongly. And Marine Roberts, unfortunately, is still clustered with the construction sector, although we have changed and we're no longer listed as a construction stock. But that has resulted to us trading at the low levels, and it's very opportunistic to now approach shareholders with a 15 rand offer.
You talk about this restructuring that has come to the fore. How do you intend to deliver value without Aton, or in the absence of Marine Roberts not being taken private?
Well, Aton, we cannot see how ownership through Aton would bring any value more to what we are currently able to deliver as a group. I think there must be appreciation of the fact that since the oil price collapse in November 2014, the oil and gas platform has had a very, very difficult period of trading. And I think we've actually done remarkably well, given the circumstances under which our business was conducted. The underground mining platform is doing remarkably well at this stage. So I can't really see how Aton would bring additional value.
Yeah. What this does is heighten the potential for a strategic misalignment between executive management. Does this become an untenable situation that sees you distracted from the path Marianne Roberts has been on?
I hope not. I think we cannot speak on behalf of Aton, and we don't know what the strategic objective would be should they acquire control of the group. But hopefully there wouldn't be a completely different view on strategic direction.
Well, Henry, we're going to have to see how this all plays itself out. Thanks so much for having joined us in studio this evening. Of course, Sir Henry Lass is CEO of Marianne Roberts. Well, shares in Pumalela received a welcome boost today. The company's announced that shareholders will receive a 42-cent interim payout. That's 24% higher than the previous year. It delivered headline earnings growth of 23% to 83.1 million rand and a 4% rise in net income to just over 808 million rand due to an improved performance by its betting operations. The company's CEO, Riaan du Plessis, joins us in studio now to drill further into the detail and to highlight some of the prospects, I guess, moving forward. Riaan, thanks so much for joining us today. So looking at your numbers, normalized headline earnings per share up 12%, while headline earnings per share fell 9%. And that, I guess, illustrative of the costs associated with your restructuring. Is the business now where you want it to be? And is that the extent you know, at which the repositioning is going to cost you?
Yes, very much so. We used to operate two completely separate wholly owned betting businesses, a tote operation and a fixed odds business. And although they were cohabiting in most outlets, they were operated as separate businesses. And that was not the way to go forward. So we've merged those two, and we went through a painful voluntary retrenchment program, which cost us 27 million rand. And that, hence the difference between headline earnings and normalized headline earnings. That's behind us now, and we have a properly functioning betting division under one management team with separate brands. And we've repositioned our business as distinctly a betting business, which has a fixed odds and tote component, which also has a wholly owned component and two joint ventures in Superbets and Interbet, and also Premier Gateway International on the Isle of Man.
Yeah.
These betting businesses can also be put into two different categories, being retail and non-over-the-counter, which is internet and telephone.
Yeah.
So we're running the businesses now as betting businesses with a retail component and a non-over-the-counter component.
And while this restructuring has hit you, you know, from a cost perspective right now, how much cost savings does it generate moving forward?
We on our 27 million, we will have an 18-month payback. So it's well worth doing, although painful for the company and the people concerned.
Absolutely. Well, discretionary income has been under pressure, with confidence levels now improving, outlook and expectations about the economy and where it's headed on the up. How soon before you see that translate for the business?
Well, we're hopeful that a lifting of the local economy now with the new government will generate more. And more disposable income is good for us because we compete for the consumer's disposable rand.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good for us. The stronger rand, on the other hand, doesn't suit us that well. But I'm a truly proper South African. So what's good for the country? And I think overall, if the local economy starts to increase, then that we will benefit more than the weak or than the strong rand.
Yeah, what your results have also highlighted is that this long-standing legal battle with bookies over fears. Talk us through what's actually transpiring there, and how soon before resolve surfaces on that front.
Look, the battle's been in various courts for over 5 years now, I guess, is my estimate. It is drawing to a close, and we are confident of the correct outcome in the end. We put up a racing show which costs us a fortune, and we deserve to get paid fair market value for somebody wanting to display the live picture in a betting shop.
Yeah.
And that's what the whole battle is about.
Absolutely. Okay, so we wait to see how that unfolds. In the meantime, you've embarked on this franchise initiative by offering Betting World franchises and TAB agencies in provinces, where new betting licenses are to be issued to previously disadvantaged individuals. Talk us through the rationale there and the kind of growth you see that garnering for the business.
We've seen, firstly, the Northwest Gambling Board, with other boards in tow, issuing new bookmaker licenses to local PDIs. So a license requirement is that a majority of the shares in the license must be owned by local PDIs. Now, we provide a fully turnkey franchised solution to such local PDIs. And we enable them to deploy a concept that works for us all over the country. Mm. So you put in there a Betting World fixed odds business, you put in a TAB tote business, and you put in between 5 and 30 limited payout machines, which gives you an attractive betting shop from which you can earn a decent keep. And the good thing about it is that we manage the fixed odds risk. And we also assist them in kitting out, finding the premises, kitting them out. And then they benefit from operating under the TAB and Betting World brands, which obviously gives customers the confidence of a national infrastructure.
Well, your share price up today, and speaking to Nessie Chetty, he says hard to fault the numbers. Thanks so much for having joined us in studio this evening, Rian. It's been a pleasure. Rian du Plessis is CEO of Pumalela. And that's where I leave things with you for this half hour. But do stay tuned. Business Features is coming up after the break. And I'll see you again at 7 o'clock with the news. We also recap on Murray and Roberts CEO Henry Larsen's conversation, taking us through that rationale once again behind the rejection of Aton's $400 million takeover bid, while EOH's CEO Zunaid Mayat will be giving us more insight on the company's interim results and where exactly the business is at this stage. So stay with us.